You're listening to Veracity Radio. Last question here. Pretty much 8 years of policies has put the last year and a half on its ear with the Obama administration. Scott Horton asked you this question before about Obama's role in the Arab world. Being that we have this history to face and confront, and we have this ongoing conflict in two countries, what do you think Obama's role needs to be now? If you were in his position, what would be some of the first things you would do to adjust our world position related to these issues, related to the torture, detainee abuse? Let's leave how to fight in Iraq and Afghanistan alone just for a moment, mainly about this moral face. What would you do?
Sure. Well, first, you know, I'm a war fighter. I'm an intelligence professional, so I already know how easy it is to be seduced by the kinetic side of warfare. As we like to say, bombs, guns, and helicopter rides. They're lots of fun, and all the young guys want to do it. I just finished a book called An End to Al-Qaeda, Breaking Bin Laden's Jihad and Restoring America's Honor. And I take a completely different view. I take a view that the Obama administration is just starting to come around to, where what we really need to do is we need to go after the ideology of Al-Qaeda. You need to go after why they fight, how they feel that they are validated to carry out the operations that they do in such a ruthless manner that they do it. They feel that they have a base of support. That base of support needs to be taken away from them, no matter how small it is. Al-Qaeda is a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the beliefs in the Muslim world. And in fact, Al-Qaeda is actually a existential threat to Islam. It is not an existential threat to democracy or the United States.
Right.
And they have made it very, very clear that they will destroy traditional Islam before they have, and of course bring 1.5 billion Muslims on their side before they go into a clash against democracy. So to fight Al-Qaeda, you have to literally kick the chair of their belief out from under them. When I operate in the Muslim world, and I speak in the Muslim world, I live there most of the year, it's startling to see the expressions on the faces of Muslims. When you spell out very clearly some of the things that Al-Qaeda seeks to do within Islam, first off, the first thing that they'll tell you is it's not Islam. They want to, you know, for example, you hear people on the political opposite side of the aisle often say, well, they want to dominate the world with Islam. No, Al-Qaeda wants to dominate the world, but their ideology is cultist. As a matter of fact, it's occurred three times in Islam, and the Prophet Muhammad actually warned about cult groups that would pop up that would appear to be more Muslim than he was a Muslim.
Right.
But he said, as a matter of fact, the Prophet Muhammad said, groups like this will fly from Islam at the first moment as fast as an arrow will leave the bow.
Mm.
Al-Qaeda is very, very much like the first cult that occurred in Islam, a group called the Kharijites or the Khawarij. This group assassinated the third caliph of Islam and split Islam in half. So the rift between the Sunnah and the Shia comes down to seven terrorist members of this group, Kharijites. It's funny because Al-Qaeda adopted all of the main beliefs of the Kharijites, the right to declare any Muslim a non-Muslim, takfir, and kill them, the right to kill women and children, which is not written in any part of the laws of warfare in Islam, the right to declare jihad without any legal authority. It's just fascinating. And Islam views the Kharijites as not even Muslims, not even a band of Muslims, not even... how can I put it? Not even corrupt Muslims. They view them as people who left Islam entirely. And Al-Qaeda needs to be framed in this way because they really do intend to act as a virus and infect not the West, but they intend to infect Islam and Muslims anywhere that they are in the world. And this is why you get guys who are confused like Major Hassan or young guys like Omar Farouk Abu Mutallab, the guy who tried to blow himself up in Detroit.
Right.
They are seeking some center, and Al-Qaeda tends to offer that center but it's such a radical, radical, radical form of what they believe is Islam, that these young guys believe that they are actually purifying Islam, when in fact they are turning against Islam. And they're adding, as a matter of fact, Al-Qaeda wants to add two new pillars to Islam. One is perpetual holy war until the world is Islamic. And the seventh is martyrdom during that holy war is an obligation of everyone. So, you know, you tell this to Muslims and they go, no, there's only five pillars to Islam and these two are not it.
Right.
Wouldn't
it be blasphemy? I mean, if you had someone who came along and said, I'm going to add to this. I know in the Christian world, I've had that pounded in my head that there's these last passages in the Bible that if this has ever been changed or tainted, death will become you. It's like
the word is called bid'ah.
Okay.
And it's bid'ah, which is heresy or heretical innovation, which means where you've changed something. You know, you've innovated the Quran to make it heretical. The Saudis use this term against the Al-Qaeda organization and their beliefs all the time. But, of course, we're not listening because many people in the United States and the West want to turn this into a war between Islam and the West, when, in fact, the West needs to come to the rescue and aid of Islam to fight this virus. And the Muslim world is waiting for that. So, Barack Obama's first overture to the Muslim world was very good, but he's been so overwhelmed by all these other horrible things which are occurring in the United States that, to a certain extent, he's losing a lot of ground.
Right.
Should I ever be called on to advise the White House, it'll be quite simple. We need to delegitimize the Al-Qaeda organization, as they've shown in their national security strategy last month, to take Islam... the word terrorism out of Islam when talking about Al-Qaeda. They are not Muslim. The things that they do are so un-Islamic that the only reason that Muslims seem to back them is based on often many of the mistakes that we make and the fact that he calls himself a Muslim. And you have to do a counter-ideology campaign to where the tea seller in Peshawar says, hey, I'm not going to sell you guys tea anymore or send you any more dates. I don't think you're real. I think that you're against Islam. And the Muslim world is just waiting for some assistance on that. But to do it, we have got to stop making our errors that put the ammunition into their hands and torture reports like this, doctors taking part in experiments on torture in order to make that torture better is so strictly un-American that the rest of the world is just sitting in shock, wondering when we're going to condemn our own errors. And until we do that, it's going to be very difficult for them to come and assist us in saving themselves. So the longer that we wait, the more that we act as hypocrites and don't actually come forward and hold accountable the people that have committed crimes. The harder it's going to be for us to fight Al-Qaeda. We are now in the longest war in American history as of this week. And believe me, I think that we can short-circuit this war in no time if we get the support of the Muslim world on our side. But it's going to have to be an active global campaign where we will have to, you know, admit that some things were done wrong and that people should be held into account.
I don't know if you got to see, there was a 60 Minutes presentation just a few weeks back called The Narrative. And it was a former extremist who, I guess he got it one day. I'd have to go pull the article back up. But this one person who had been a former extremist came out and said, I had it wrong, man. I really had it wrong. And
Right. He's
now gone back to Pakistan and different places and tried to educate to crowds who seem to really be listening to him to say, that's not what's happening. This is not a war against Islam. It's a war against this particular group. And
Right. If
we keep believing it's a war against Islam, we're screwed.
Right. In my book, An End to Al-Qaeda, I outline in there how we can use these, how we can facilitate the Muslim world to communicate this message from former radicals. You know, Al-Qaeda themselves told us the six steps that it would literally destroy their base of support. was done in 2006 by one of their senior members, and he said, if they ever got the radicals who have left our group out and popularized their cause, it would damage us immensely. And, you know, as I advocate in my book, we need to get those people. We need to create a series of TV commercials made in, I don't know, Dubai or Saudi Arabia or someplace, you know, by Muslim production crews. And we need to facilitate that and buy every, you know, 1 minute out of every 3 minutes of break time in Southwest Asia, so that every television in Pakistan, every television in Saudi Arabia and in the Muslim world is seeing this message that Al-Qaeda is illegitimate, and that I was part of that group. I have realized that they're destroying Islam. I'm not going to be part of it. Don't support them. We created advertising in the United States, and why we are literally not facilitating the mouthpiece. We can't do it ourselves. Americans can't go out there on television and speak for the Muslim world, but we can certainly help people facilitate that, and in doing so, we will overcome this legacy of torture. But 2 years ago, I spoke on the Islam Channel in London, and I apologized. I said, this is not American. This is not how we operate. The people that chose this, well, they invaded Iraq. You already see how they operate. And the narrator, who has 40 million Muslim viewers, said, you're the first American to ever come on this channel to speak for the Americans in such a way that we can respect you. And I said, well, because that is not what we stand for. We were wronged on 9/11. Islam is causal. All of these deaths in September 11th that Al-Qaeda has carried out and caused to have carried out, including Iraq, are on his head. And since then, other people in Al-Qaeda, the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, has come out and said the same thing. These deaths are causal. Al-Qaeda has caused them all.
Right.
So bin Laden needs to be held to account on that. So why we are not out actively pushing this narrative is beyond me.
One last thought of the about the American side of that, the populace, is that, first off, I will not engage in a stereotype about Americans. I've traveled the U.S. enough to know we're a very diverse, interesting bunch. And most of us are just working really hard to feed our family and get home. There is a percentage in our country, though, that will not tolerate any positive discussion about Islam. They have been so inculcated in this idea that Islam is an evil religion and such that, they kind of serve that negative reinforcement. Do you think that there's a way that within the U.S. military, if we found leaders within the U.S. military who may feel that in their bones, they're trying to overcome it, but they can come along and say, look, to the rest of America, we need to stop saying that. We need to quit talking about...
It's already happened.
Okay.
It's already happened. Mm-hmm. You're right. I wrote about this extensively in my book. There is an entire industry devoted to demonizing Islam.
Right.
And the whole premise of my book is that Islam is under attack. Islam literally has a virus that will kill it and will give them the 1.5 billion people that they want for their cultist holy war. And it's funny because it was on Amazon. Someone went on Amazon and wrote a review from a right-wing magazine, a woman who wrote for Commentary and another magazine. Mm-hmm. And she said, even though General Petraeus and... General Petraeus and General McChrystal, you know, the head of special forces for the last 8 years, and the guy who's now running our war in Afghanistan, even though they agree with Mr. Nance, it just goes to show how badly our military has been taken over by this idea of being nice to Islam.
Exactly.
Now, I'm paraphrasing.
No, I've read that. Even if I haven't read hers, I've read those words through someone else's mouth enough in the last year, right?
Utterly amazing. Listen, they will not believe anyone that they don't want to believe. If they're not going to believe General Petraeus and General McChrystal, and believe me, General McChrystal was head of SOCOM. He's a very smart guy. Special Forces is out there now, and they're trying to get back to the fundamentals of counterinsurgency, which is take the population away from the enemy.
Right.
There are people out there who just will not buy into anything which will make Islam look religion that it is. They're just people who want to have a better life for their kids and go to church. Go to mosque on Friday and live a good life and have a better life for their family. It's the American dream. But there are groups of people out there who believe that Al-Qaeda is Islam, and Al-Qaeda needs that perception to stay. They need these people. So people who insult Islam in that way and advocate this level of ignorance are literally in tune and working for the Al-Qaeda media machine. Al-Qaeda desperately needs this misperception.
I've used that thinking related to, and I don't really like to use left and right, but they're unfortunately easy handles in a conversation. When talking to leftists about, say, the CIA or some institute that they're wholly against just out of a kind of monolithic condemnation, I've asked them, well, do you not realize that in those organizations or in the military, for instance, that there are people who completely agree with you? And they'll stop and think about that for a minute, and they'll say, well, maybe. And I say, okay, well, can you quantify how many might? And they say, well, I don't know. But it opens a door for them, one, to quit perceiving this group, this organization or a country or their own country in monolithic terms. And they can begin to see, wait a minute, there are people like Ray McGovern, you know, or there's a lot of people who've served in these different entities who come along and spoken up. In the same ways that they believe, and I say, well, strategically only. I don't mean ideologically, but just strategically. Isn't it in your own interest to find every single one of those people who is closer to you than what you see as the fascist state or what you see as the police state or what you see as the encroaching government or whatever? I mean, if you haven't the nuance to pick the difference between your enemies and your potential allies, then you're lost.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, I don't see that on the right. You know, I was conservative for the better part of my life. But as an intelligence professional, I don't have a religion. I don't have a political ideology.
Right.
I, you know, as I used to say, I work for the seat of the President of the United States, not the man.
Right.
However, but when you're wrong, you're wrong. And when you're about to make a horrible, horrific mistake, which will have decades of consequences, you've got to speak up within your community. You've got to be able to say, hey, you know, don't invade Iraq until you've talked to people who speak Arabic and who know Iraq, okay? Or who've had to make that decision. Don't abandon Afghanistan right after Tora Bora when everybody's walked off the east side of the mountain down to Pashinar and it's down in northern Waziristan. You've got to go get these guys. There was an ideology out there which intelligence was there to validate political policies. They were not there to help guide political policy. And that's what this is all about. This is about, you know, in my worldview, this is about putting an end to that organization, the Al-Qaeda organization. And, you know, we get this great debate like, oh my God, the CIA is going to kill this, this imam, Alawaki, who happens to be an American citizen and is extrajudicial, and something has to be done. Hold on. Okay.
Right.
I understand that argument. It's horrible. Okay? But this man is the heart of, you know, inspiration of attacks to kill many American citizens. Okay? Maybe he needs to be tried in absentia. You know, maybe he needs to be given an opportunity to come to his defense, but should a predator drone, you know, blow him up, you know, I'm not going to cry over that. There is a hard right opinion, which is dangerous, and there's a hard left opinion to the point where they almost come back around to the same side.
Yeah.
I don't play within those parameters. I just want to keep this nation safe with whatever little I can do, and if that means fostering understanding between the Western world and the Islamic world in order to make the Al-Qaeda organization disappear into history along with the Khawarij and the Karamita and some of these other cult groups that have popped up in Islam, or put them in the same realm as Jim Jones and the People's Temple in Guyana and Om Shinrikyo in Japan. I want these people in the history book. And for us to sit back and forth and fight over the minutiae over who has done what that's right or wrong is a little disingenuous. However, torture really, really helped the Al-Qaeda organization. They could not have asked for better except for maybe an invasion of Iraq. And they got both.
Malcolm Nance, an end to Al-Qaeda, destroying bin Laden's jihad and restoring America's honor. I want to thank you for joining us. This has been a great conversation with you, and I want you to come back.
Well, it's my pleasure.